I think if people knew how hard business was, even the few people that go into business for themselves, most of them probably wouldn't. You're gonna have a lot of stuff that you're gonna have to work on a regular, daily, weekly basis, but it'll at least help give you a way to organize what you're doing and have that place where you can continually try to improve stuff. I think that's where it makes a big difference, and especially for people that aren't doing it right now, because you just don't know. Not that you won't figure it out, but it's gonna take you a lot longer to figure it out the hard way, I think.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. Most people don't leave a career in law enforcement, move across the country, buy a foreclosure site unseen, and decide this is the beginning of my next life. But Chase Calhoun did. 8 years later, Chase is running a 130 plus unit real estate portfolio, overseeing 26 active construction projects at once. That kind of growth creates a new kind of pressure. Today, Chase isn't wondering whether he can find the next deal. He's staring at a different ceiling: capital, hiring. It's the same founder trap, just at a much higher level. Doing too much himself, carrying too many decisions, and knowing the business can't grow if he stays the bottleneck. Chase, welcome to Hitting the Ceiling.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about really your experience going from law enforcement to buying a property and deciding you're going to do construction and development, and what prompted you to make that decision?
So there's a little bit in between there. And so I had spent a lot of time working in law enforcement, and I actually had transitioned careers briefly before making that decision. And so at some point I'd switched to the private sector in the commercial insurance industry. And so I had wanted to start investing in real estate in the San Francisco Bay Area back in the like kind of 2007, 8, 9, 10 housing market crash. And so hindsight being 2020, I should have kind of got started then and there when I thought it would be a good idea, but I had waited. And by the time I was really ready to go, it didn't make sense there anymore. And so I always joke around, people always ask how I ended up in Little Rock. And the joke is that we got lost and this is where we ended up. But the truth is I was working that commercial insurance job. And I was like, hey, where can you send me where you pay me the same amount of money? And it's cheaper to live. And so they named off a bunch of places, tried to get me to go to some other spots. And hindsight, Florida may have been a good choice too, because the weather, they're a little bit nicer there. But Little Rock, Arkansas is one that popped up. And so I just kind of had jumped online and saw that you can buy these, like, at the time, very cheap houses, $30,000, $40,000 houses that rent for $800 or $900 a month. And so we're going to do it. So my now wife and I made an offer on a foreclosure sight unseen, paid all cash and literally moved across the country to camp out in it while we fixed it up. And that's really how we got started.
And did you have designs on being an entrepreneur, to just sort of bought the house and all of a sudden, here you go?
Yeah, no. So it's funny. I always tell people, like, I think I had some very vague goals early on, but they were more along the lines of like, I want to invest in real estate so that if I ever found myself kind of without work, I had just enough coming in that I could kind of survive. And that was like that initial goal. And I think that initial goal was like 10 units. If I get to 10 units, then maybe someday when I retire, or if I, you know, there's ever a slowdown in my work, it would kind of cover expenses. And so it's funny how the goals kind of, the goalpost changes a lot as you go, and things morph and shift, and it's become a full-blown, you know, businesses now. But it definitely wasn't the probably the intention when we first got started. It was just that, I think maybe chasing that little bit of that financial freedom was the initial goal.
Right. Just having that base of income coming in, pay the bills, total freedom, opens up a bunch of options. I tend to call that the adjacent possible, which is you go into, take some action, and then all of a sudden, while you're in action, a whole bunch of new opportunities open up and you have more optionality, you have more choices, and you get to choose which one you want, and rinse, wash, and repeat. And here you are, 130 doors. Is that where you're sitting now?
We own and operate a real estate investment company. I think internally owned properties is about 75 units. And then we do some third-party management. So it's about 100, 130 or maybe 140 total under management.
Awesome. And well, how many employees do you have? What's the overall structure managing multiple kind of companies? Do you have them all together? Do you have them on separate accountability charts? How does that work?
Yes. And so it's like we do, everybody's a little bit kind of mixed together and we're jumping in. The companies have their separate employees, but we all work together and there is a crossover. I would say more recently over the last year and a half, we've really pushed to try to separate the companies as much as possible, but there definitely is some bleed over. We've got about 10 employees right now. And then the construction company, subcontracts the construction work. So we have a few in-house employees for the construction company, but we have dozens of subcontractors and vendors that we work with on the property management company as well, but especially on the construction company. So a lot of those subcontractors are, you know, people that we've worked with for a long time and very similar to employees.
Now, do you hold them to the same core values standards? Do they have a seat on the accountability chart? How do you operate in those terms, given their contractors versus employees?
Not all of them. We have some vendors that we work with who are contracted vendors. So for example, like a fractional CFO, who's technically a contracted vendor, but he sits on our leadership team and is part of our US meetings and stuff like that. And so a lot of the construction subcontractors, they would be held, and we're picking new subcontractors to work with and together, we definitely want them to share those core values. And if not, a lot of times that's when we're finding ourselves looking for new kind of vendors and subcontractors. And the ones that have stuck it out with us the longest, I think, are ones that do really mesh well with our core values. And so we probably continue to do better at that, especially on the subcontractor side. But it is something that I think we do see now.
So when we think about the growth, what are your, like, what's your 10 year target as an example? What are you aiming for?
Yeah, it's big. And so it's, we're trying to get to $250 million in revenue in 10 years. And so, and that's, it's probably going to be heavy on the construction side. So, but growing the real estate investment and property management side at the same time. We're what I would consider like vertically integrated real estate investment company. And so it's, we're really, we're involved in building high quality real estate. And so, but it's, we're doing all piece of it. So is the developer owner, the construction company that's actually building it, and then the property manager that's managing it long-term.
How do you quantify that $250 million in revenue? Like, what's the balance between the residential, or the, I should say, the property management, the investment property, and the construction? You said most of it's construction, but what's kind of the balance? How many employees do you think you'll have?
At that time, probably 35 yeah. plus employees. It would probably be mm-hmm. even a little bit more than that, I would think. We look at it as like, as unit counts. And so as we start looking towards scaling farther, like right now we do a lot of single family and small multifamily ground up new construction investment properties on what I would call infill or scattered site lots. And so as we look at going towards those bigger goals, it's like, how can we get from doing, you know, whatever, starting 3 to 5 single family homes or duplexes, we need to be scaling to larger development projects. And so really over the next several years, we'll be pushing towards doing just larger development projects. And it's really going to be a unit count per year time thing then.
Mm-hmm. This is the Hitting the Ceiling podcast. And when we talk about hitting the ceiling, it's the moments of time where you feel stuck and frustrated and you're not quite able to break through, unless you can focus in on and strengthen those 5 leadership abilities to simplify, to delegate, to predict, to systemize and structure. When you look at your journey so far, from the beginning, what are those moments in time where you, maybe you're experiencing them right now, maybe you have and you broke through, and which leadership ability do you think is sort of the one that you struggle with most?
I think it changes over time, right? And so I think early on, one of the biggest ones was just like the delegation and bringing on the proper team members and be willing to delegate to them. I think over time, like as I look at it, my, and it probably something still even today. So like is bringing in those key team members to delegate not just tasks or job duties, but really let them also start to take ownership and own their roles and to help grow the business as well. Specifically in leadership, I think that's one of the hardest ones to break through, and one that maybe still see today is having room for improvement.
When I think about there's sort of a layer of delegation where you are delegating tasks and some of the roles, but delegating your thinking is sort of the next level of delegation. Have you found leaders that start to think like you and make decisions like you, and you're like, oh, wow, I like this. Has that happened for you yet?
A little bit. And it's great when it happens. And then again, for me, where I see a lot of opportunity right now is just investing like the time and energy in the leaders that I do have, trying to like not just teach them how to do their job, but like give them the room to like learn what we're doing and why, but also the ability to make the decisions and try to just really grow their leadership so that I'm not having to be as involved in their pieces of it.
When you think about how to get there, how to get to the $250 million in revenue compared to where you are now, and then thinking about those five leadership abilities hitting the ceiling, and what are some of the bottlenecks, the constraints, as you kind of look forward and you're strengthening your own ability to predict, what are the things that you're thinking about now to proactively address issues before they become issues, before you experience the chaos on your journey to grow and get more of what you want from the business?
Again, I think it changes over time. Like right now, I see capital as being a big constraint. Historically, we hadn't taken on outside capital. I mean, we partner a lot with banks, and so we borrow a lot of money from banks, but as far as investor capital, and so I see is capital as being a constraint for us in the future. And then things like the economy. I mean, real estate and construction are very cyclical industries, and so I would say like right now is a slower, harder time in real estate. And so it's like realizing that it's okay for things to be a little bit slower right now, but how can we continue to like build these systems, get better at what we do, and be prepared, because it's one of those things with real estate. It's like a pendulum. It's swung very much to the slow side right now, but when it swings back the other way and it's go time, just how can we as a company be in the best place possible so that we're not only kind of survive through this slower time, but kind of thrive through it and then be ready to go when it's time to go. And so I think capital is a big constraint, and then just kind of some of these uncontrollables in the economy and the market right now, just being able to work through those.
And when you think about the process and documenting your processes, getting them followed by everyone in the organization, and then you add growth to that, have you seen instances where the things you used to do at, you know, three people or three properties don't really work at 130 and growing?
It's funny. It's one thing I've noticed a lot recently is it's easy to like kind of be hard on ourselves or beat ourselves up, because it's like, hey, this thing we're doing isn't working very well. We need to refine this process or figure out a better way to handle this. But if you look back at like the process we had a couple years ago didn't exist. And then it was even worse. And so it's just, I think being, it definitely changes over time and it evolves over time for good, but it's just realizing that we're making small improvements over time. And we want to make as many of those small improvements as possible, because they really compound in a positive way. And then just giving ourselves a little bit of grace, because sometimes we feel like we don't have it all figured out. We should be doing better. But I think when I look back and see how far we've come, that really helps a lot with that, because we have come a long way, even just in the last couple of years, I think.
When you think about focus, I've worked with quite a few real estate, vertically integrated real estate companies. And in my views that they can tend to be a little bit chaotic, just simply because you've got tenants that you're taking care of, you have acquisitions that you're going to try to go get, and then you have the pure unpredictability, let's say, of a construction business. And do you have realtors too, or no?
Just very small amount. We're not really focused on the outside real estate sales. We do a little bit of it, but try to keep that as minimal as possible.
Like, where do you draw the line in terms of core focus, right? Like, what do you feel that your niche is as a real estate investor, developer? Like, where does it end and where does it begin? Or is it just real estate all encompassing for you?
It's really tough, like with this industry that we've chosen. So with the real estate construction, stuff like that, because sometimes it is, that's a big thing that I've worried about. Like, are we not focused enough on one thing? But it's almost impossible to do what we do well without having these multiple pieces kind of going on at the same time. So like our niche is just high quality investment real estate. And so improving communities through high quality investment real estate, especially I would say on, well, both the real estate investment, but especially on the construction side, there's a lot of shiny objects that'll pop up and there's always a lot of opportunities out there. And so we have to balance, like, we don't want to say no to everything. We want to make sure that we're bringing enough revenue to pay the bills and keep things rolling while we continue to hone in on our niche and our focus. But we do want to be really careful not to just go chase all those shiny objects, because it's, especially on the construction side, it's really easy to do. And then again, with the like real estate investment and construction, I think it was especially the real estate investment. I think that was like a cool thing that everybody wanted to do a couple years ago when it was really easy and the rates were low and leasing was good. I think it's less so now. Sometimes I wish that I was super passionate about some really simple business that had one product to sell and I could be hyper-focused on that one thing. Yeah. Yeah. Or I would have, you know, been hyper-focused on buying Bitcoin 10 years ago or something like that. Like that would have been cool, but, right. It's here we
or
are.
Or buying Nvidia stock in 2005 or something.
Yeah. That would have been awesome, but that's just not the cards that God dealt me. And so it's, this is what we do and this is what we're passionate about and we're very good at it. So it's, we're going to try to be as focused as possible. And it changed. I would say it changes over time. I mean, a couple of years ago, we were heavily focused on heavy remodel construction projects. We were buying distressed properties and renovating those and making high quality investment properties through that, but it wasn't scalable. And so that's a lot of like, we've kind of pivoted over the last couple of years and transitioned to ground up new construction just because it is more scalable. And if we want to get to these big goals, it's the only path that I can see is through that. And again, it may change a little bit more over time and continue to refine. And hopefully as we move towards that, we can, you know, stop doing this stuff that really is taken away from that and continue to be hyper-focused just on that one thing.
I think this happens to a lot of companies where markets shift, the profit pools, if you will, shift from one place to another. How do you sit with your team and have those conversations when you are noticing those shifts? Because not everybody deals with change particularly well. And you're moving from kind of one thing that you do to another thing that you do. How do you have those conversations with the team? And for the listener, what are the points that from your experience would be most helpful to them as they're helping guide those shifts and those changes?
Just being clear and communicating where I see that potential. So I see, like for us, I see that potential in ground up new construction at scale. And again, it's not that we're not going to do other stuff right now. Like we still do some of that type of construction for customers. I think that takes away a little bit from our focus because dealing with those customers is an added layer of complexity. But again, we need to do that for right now to make sense. But a good example would be like, it is a little bit slower right now than I would like personally. And so it's really tempting for people like on our team to say, hey, let's start doing residential remodel stuff. There's a lot of people are doing that right now. And I think we can get in and make some money doing that. But just coming back on to the focus of what we want to do, the scale at which we want to do it and why. And it's just not, you've never seen a super large construction company or real estate investment company that does kitchen and bathroom remodels or very seldomly because it's much more complex and it's just hard to scale that. So I think just communicating and then communicating why so that they know what we're doing or what we're pushing towards and why I think is very important.
Communicating the why is such an important aspect of that. Most visionary entrepreneurs, we tend to move quite quickly and very rarely, unless under protest, slow down enough to explain the why and say, okay, we're doing this because these four things are true, and let's have the discussion, let's have the debate about that to bring everyone along for the ride. Because if you don't, you end up having to, everything is much harder without the team rowing. And worse yet, if they're not rowing, they're rowing against you, and you kind of ends up with that leadership team and company swirl where you're not really making the progress that you want. Has there been any times where you found yourself in that swirl where you feel like you're rowing in one direction and everyone else is either rowing against you or not at all, where it feels like you're carrying the load?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, especially as we're growing, like we don't have, I'm still wearing several hats in the business, and there's been times where it was even more. And so I think you feel that when you're kind of doing multiple roles and still feeling like you need extra help. I think in the past, maybe with past employees who are no longer with us, it's been interesting because a lot of times, like those employees who are not aligned with what we're trying to do and where we're trying to go end up kind of removing themselves in a way. And so I would say we're fortunate right now where it seems like everybody that we have that's working with us today is really bought in with where we're going and what we're trying to do. And so I think that's a good thing. The biggest thing right now would just be sometimes I feel a little bit of that swirl just because I'm still doing a lot of different things at once sometimes.
You ever see the Jean-Claude Van Damme commercial where it starts like really close in on his face and the camera starts to zoom out, and then it turns out he's doing a complete split on two tractor trailers going down the highway?
I've never seen that, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of the analogy that I use when leaders are sitting in multiple seats, like up close, it kind of looks okay. But then as you zoom out, you're like, that's probably really uncomfortable and probably not sustainable for a very long time. Which kind of takes me to thinking about when you are sitting in multiple seats and you're having to carry more than you want to, or maybe you should, that's healthy with the business. How do you take care of yourself? How do you take, kind of the analogy of that the flight attendants talk about on a plane, right? When the oxygen mask falls, you put it on yourself first before you can help any people. What are the things that you do to put the oxygen mask on first so that you can help everyone else through?
I mean, there's a lot. One of the biggest things for me that I've found over time is it's almost like a muscle in a way. Like it's something is I've done this a little bit longer. I've just gotten a little bit better at it. But tactically, I think there's a lot of small things that I've done or maybe started doing over the last couple of years that have helped a lot. For me, exercise is a big one, and preferably like harder exercise is a great one. Like it can't
be easy. It has to be.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah. When you're going to bed extra tired type thing. I mean, that's a big one. I've talked to several entrepreneurs that will say the same thing. I love wine and beer and stuff like that, but I cut out alcohol a couple years ago just because it was messing with my sleep. And especially when you combine like stress and a bunch of stuff going on at work and then not getting that good sleep, it kind of negatively affects. So it's a very simple one, but just cutting that out has made a huge difference for me. And then just trying to get away, get a little break. Me and my family, we travel a lot. We'll go to a lot of I'll do conferences and stuff like that, either business or maybe personal development related conferences, but taking the family along and making a little trip out of it. And then locally we have a second home, a lake house that's close by, and just getting away for the weekend to get a little extra, like just getting away from the office is sometimes needed, even if it's just for a weekend to get some time off. So little stuff like that has helped me a lot. And then a lot of it's just being, efficient with my time and my schedule and making sure I'm feeling productive when I am working.
Now, do you find that it takes a little while for you to get into recovery mode, if you will? Like, I know for me, and the reason I say that is if I have time off scheduled, I'm pretty much 80 hours a week most often, and I need to take some time off. And so then it takes me about 4 days before like the shakes stop of constantly being on. Or are you one of those people who can just turn it off and you're good?
It's interesting. I listened to somebody not too long ago who talked about, instead of talking about vacationing, just traveling. I think it was Dan Martell. And it's like, instead of having these vacations where you're just going to completely check out and let everything go and then come back to a nightmare, how can you like kind of, you know, not that you'll ever be balanced, but how can you integrate work in a way where it's like you're still working a little bit, so you're not feeling like you have to completely unplug and then being all stressed about it. Cause I used to be the same way. Like I would leave and it would take me like 4 days to relax. And then I'd finally relax and it'd be like time to come home. And then I'd come back to a nightmare. And so I think maybe just balancing that a little bit better. Like we travel a lot, but I'll still work a very little bit, but it'll be just enough so that like, I don't feel like I'm necessarily having to get, you know, have that time to like de-stress enough or whatever. And it does come in waves. I think there's seasons. I think I'm in a season right now where I'm working more and traveling less than I would like to. And just realizing that because I'm doing this through the long-term lens, like that's okay. It's not going to be like this forever. And there's been times where I've had to work a lot less and there are probably times where I have to work more and that's also okay. The lake house thing is weird because if I stay home, if I stay in town, like I'll end up putting in a full day's worth of work on Saturday. And it's like, I don't get that real like good. I've been pretty consistent the last couple of years of like, unless it's an emergency, trying to work at all on Sundays. So at least I've got that downtime on Sundays. But like the lake house is only an hour away, but there's something about just getting away where if I go up there on a Friday night, like I do a lot better job not working as much on a Saturday and feeling more relaxed and stuff. And so that's something that's worked very, very well for me. And it's a very weird thing. Cause if I'm sitting at home on the Saturday, I'm like, I should probably be at the office getting some stuff done right now. But if I go up there, it's only, you know, an hour past my office. We have these nice kind of chill, lazy Saturdays. And so I think just kind of balancing both of those and realizing some weeks it's okay for me to put in that 80 hour week. And then there's other weeks where I'm going to try to at least, you know, take it easy for the full weekend, enjoy time with family.
Yeah. I think that change of environment, that's why so many people like to travel and just not be in their normal office. And most of us end up working at home. And so we have our home office and you changing that environment, I think is really important because as just like an athlete, you've got to recover, right? You've got to heal, recover, and then you can get back at it so you can give your best. And as we think about growing businesses with opportunity, and I'm sure for you as a real estate investor and developer, when your brain is turned on, you see the opportunities everywhere. But when it's not, right? You just don't see it. So I'm curious from the perspective of sourcing new opportunities, as you said, it's a little slow at the moment, but how do you train turning your employees' brains on to see the opportunities that you see, but they don't?
I think just taking the time to, again, communicate with them what I'm looking at, where I see these opportunities and why they make sense. And then taking the time to like train people. It's easy, I think, to take for granted. Like I've got, I'm still early on in my business career, but I've got a decent amount of experience and there's some stuff that I've learned a lot of the hard way, like the things not to do. And so just taking the time to try to communicate that and teach that to the employees. And it's really easy to say, hey, we should go buy this or do this project and just that's it. But like taking the time to slow down and like, here's why. And here's why this one makes sense and here's why this one doesn't, and taking the time just to communicate and like teach them, I think is a big part of it. And sometimes it seems like it takes a lot more time or a lot more investment to spend the time to do that, but I think it pays off in the long run. And so I think that's it, just slowing down, and especially when it comes to acquisitions and projects or like customers. And a big thing with customers is like not just the customers we want to work for, but the customers we don't want to work for and why. And so and a lot of it's like, I want them to make enough mistakes so that they learn well. But if there's some big mistakes that we can avoid, because I've already made them, like how can I communicate that to them in a way that makes sense?
I think that reminds me of a story where it was a story about New York. There's the place in New York City where there's a bunch of jewelers and how they detect fake diamonds. You know, they just handle they have their people, even starting at a young age, because usually family businesses, handling like perfect diamonds over and over and over and over again. And then they'll sneak in a fake one and they can pick it out instantly because their senses are just totally tuned into what great looks like. As soon as their senses pick up anything, they can't even put words to why it doesn't fit. They just know it doesn't fit. It's hard to do that in training your employees to know what great looks like over and over and over and over again. So as soon as they see the deviation, they can't even communicate why it's a deviation, but they just know it is. And I just think that would be cool if you could figure out a way, especially in your type of business, that all your people know what great is over and over again, but they see the thing that is off.
I think one thing that I think a lot about more recently, and like one thing that we'll talk about like at our leadership levels, like I've got this information, this experience in my head that I've gained through those experiences, good and bad. Like I said, a lot, especially in real estate investing and construction and development, a lot of them are bad experiences where I gained that knowledge. Then it's like, so like, how can I take that out of my head and share it with them in a way that like, it, again, not saying they're not going to make mistakes, but how can we mitigate some of those mistakes? And then when stuff does happen, like taking it more, not getting upset about it, but like taking those situations as learning experiences and ways, just how can we improve next time so that we're not having these kind of issues? And so it's just, I think it's something that's an ongoing deal. Probably I've been with all entrepreneurs when they're starting to grow teams, it's something that they deal with or struggle with, how to share that information well.
From your law enforcement background, I'm sure you had after action reports and those types of things. Have you instituted any of those types of systems into the business?
We've done it in the past with construction projects. And so it's something that usually will, when possible, we'll try to, budgeting accurately is an important thing, at least to me, on construction projects. If we think something's going to cost X and it ends up costing substantially more or even less, like that's a problem. And so spending that time afterwards to kind of evaluate, hey, how do we do, not just on the construction project, but how do we do with our like initial underwriting and our budget going into it? Were we accurate? And if not, why, and how can we improve that moving forward? And then even on the construction stuff, like I think when we take the time to look back after some of these projects and see, hey, what went well, what didn't, and how can we improve those? I think it helps a lot with those teams. I think that construction piece is somewhere where we've used it quite a bit in the past, and we'll probably continue to do that in the future, just because it helps us get a little bit better each time. And as we bring new people on, it helps them understand kind of why we do things a certain way.
So if you had to go back in time and have a conversation with your younger self and you're about to embark on this business, what would be the piece of advice that you would give your younger self?
Pick something that's easier would probably be the first one, because this is
Bitcoin. Maybe I should rephrase the question.
No, I know. Yeah. I get where you're going with it. So I think just being patient and having like that long-term lens. One thing that I wish I would have done, so obviously this is an EOS podcast, so it's like you obviously fully believe in it. Most of the people here fully believe in it, but I think implementing something, I like EOS a lot myself, but something either EOS specifically or something like it earlier on. It's funny because I've had the opportunity to be part of a like kind of an entrepreneur type group of successful men, and it's funny because it's something that I heard early on often. And a lot of times it was like they had these kind of rocky side hustle type businesses. And at some point it started to get a little bit better for them. And it's like, well, what changed? And it's like, oh, we started running this thing called EOS, and it helped a whole lot. And I can't tell you how many of those conversations I had. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And I'm just going to keep doing things the way I'm doing it right now. And so it's just maybe taking the time to do something like that earlier on, even before it makes sense. And again, it's not a fix all. Like you still have to yeah, put in the work. You're still going to work a bunch. It's still hard. Somebody asked me recently, like, I think if people knew how hard business was, even the few people that go into business for themselves, most of them probably wouldn't. And so it's like, you really don't understand how hard it is until you get into the thick of it. like, I think I've got a long ways to go, but just realizing that we'll continue to improve over time. And then it's amazing when I look at some of these businesses that have been doing it for years and have been very successful, like how much work they've had to put into that. So I think the biggest thing is just looking through that long-term lens and then doing things on the front end to make it easier on yourself instead of just trying to like do it all and figure it out yourself the hard way.
Yeah. And obviously for us here at EOS, we do hear that quite often. It's a very similar story. And what Gino Wickman, who's the founder of EOS, taught me was that there's lessons that I can teach you and there's lessons that you need to learn on your own. And of course, the wisdom is to know the difference between the two. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs like me, like yourself, if we see there's other people, they have a system and some of them care enough about us and see the pain that we're in to say, hey, you know, there's an easier way to do this. It's called EOS or whatever it might be. And we're like, yeah, we got this. We can do it, right? Like, let's go. And then, you know, 6 months, a year, sometimes, unfortunately, a lot longer, you're like, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why other people are doing this is because it works and it makes my life better. But I was not open to hearing it when I was, you know, starting my companies. And I was just like, I got this. I know. Who cares about the hundreds of thousands of years of people's experiences? I'm smarter, better than that.
Yeah. It sounds silly, but it's 100% where I was at. I mean, I can remember having specific conversations like that. And it was just like, I'm just going to keep bashing my head in the wall and maybe I'll figure it out eventually.
This is funny. Fun.
I was having a conversation literally yesterday with a friend of mine who he owns a real estate investment company in a different asset class. And he's grown a lot the last couple of years and he's got 20 something employees now. And he's like, we've paused all acquisitions. Like the operations is killing me. I've got all these employees and nobody knows what's going on. And that was literally like, I don't know if you've heard of EOS, but like you need to highly consider it because it's not going to fix everything. Like it's still, you're going to have a lot of stuff that you're going to have to work on a regular daily, weekly basis, but it'll at least help give you, you know, a way to organize what you're doing and have that place where you can continually try to improve stuff. I think that's where it makes a big difference, and especially for people that aren't doing it right now because you just don't know. And it takes you, not that you won't figure it out, but it's going to take you a lot longer to figure it out the hard way, I think.
And it really does come all down to building a truly great team at the heart of it.
Yeah, it's the team and the system is good, I think. And again, it's the US podcast. So I'm going to go into the US stuff a little bit, but the implementer thing, I mean, I think that's like, I know people who've tried to self-implement EOS. And I think it's better than doing nothing. But man, it just having somebody that can help walk you through some of that stuff is just such a cheat that it's not even funny. Before we implemented EOS in my business, I had gone to it was part of this entrepreneurship. It was a business workshop. And so it was just for business owners within this workshop. And I mean, I just got like beat up and raked over the coals about how I didn't have a business. I had a big side or multiple side hustles and was just playing firefighter all the time. And they gave me some really simple tasks. So like, you need to figure out what you want your organization to look like and who's going to be doing what and where. And it's like, it sounds like such an easy task, but like sitting down myself and trying to do that unguided, like I tried several times and I just couldn't get there. It just seems like such a simple thing. And then we go to implement EOS and we bring in an implementer. And it was like one of the first things we did that morning in about 30 minutes, we're able to knock it out and it was perfect. And it's evolved and changed over time and stuff, but just having somebody who has experience and has done that with other businesses, it's just funny how much that can simplify it for you.
Totally. Totally. And who's your implementer?
His name's Adam Hill. So he's based out of Denver, Colorado. And so he was somebody who I was fortunate to know before he got into that, but he was a successful CEO of a fairly large company that brought on EOS themselves. And so he got to see it. He's seen it from both sides, which I think is kind of a nice advantage having somebody like that with that experience.
Right. Cause they know what you're about to walk yourself into.
And from a bigger business. So he was the CEO of a company that was closer to the size that we're trying to go, not where we're at right now. And so it's just,
yeah,
he's got that different set of experience that helps, I think.
I think it does. And whether it's EOS and an EOS implementer or some other system or coach, I mean, you know, doing triathlons and being a triathlete, is it's always helpful to have a coach, to learn from other people, to learn from someone who's done it before. When I did my first triathlon, my first half, I did not have a coach.
And yeah, that's brave.
It wasn't the smartest thing I ever did, let's just say, because I the swim was in the ocean, and I was wearing a wetsuit, and I didn't realize, and I didn't budget my water intake to account for salt water and for wearing a wetsuit. So then on the bike, when I lost a liter of water that fell off my bike, plus not accounting for having enough in the first place, I get to the run and, you know, you just totally get dehydrated. And, you know, then afterward, I ended up walking 13 miles basically is what it turned out to be. Afterwards, one of the guys like, so, you do know that the salt water and the wetsuit drain you of all your fluids and you need to basically drink twice as much when you do that. And I'm like, no, didn't know that. That would have been useful information like 7 months ago.
The triathlon stuff's a great example. So I did have I was fortunate that I knew somebody who had competed in triathlons. And so, not only the experience that they were able to share with like, hey, like the nutrition stuff, like I never heard of the amount of liquids and sodium you had to intake, I never heard of, but just the whole type of training. Like I've been active my entire life, but I'd never heard of training based on heart rate or doing any of that kind of stuff. The first half I did still sucked because I wasn't as good a shape as I would like to be. But right. it was like, I was convinced that when I signed up for it, like if I wanted to, I could go out and do this thing today. It's like, I'll force myself to get through it. But the experience I'm sure it wasn't great on that first one, but it was substantially better than if I would have tried to train for it myself. And then especially going into that full, like I'm not as convinced that I would have been able to make it through that one just cold without having that really specialized coaching. I mean, I think that made a big difference there for sure. It is very similar if you can do the same thing in business.
All right. So Chase, as we wrap up here, thinking about other entrepreneurs who've are about to embark on where you've been, aside from choosing another business and the advice that you would give your younger self, what would you say to them to help them run a better business, to help them get more of what they want from it?
Again, looking through that long-term lens. And so I think where a lot of people struggle is if it's not going easy or going well today, that they give up too quick. So I think just being in that, having the longer term lens and not giving up. And then kind of like we're just talking about getting help earlier on, and trying to structure the business in a way that brings in not just something like US to help the way you run your business, but bringing in like those employees as you can to help with delegating some of the stuff so that you're not spread so thin. I think that's the biggest one. I think like, I know I personally went too long trying to do everything myself. And was hesitant to bring in help. And so I think that can make a big difference. And then also just trying to as early as possible, trying to build an actual business versus just kind of like that side hustle mentality. Like, how can I build a business? And one thing I found is like, I don't think that I want to completely step away someday. Like I joked around that I wanted to retire by the time I was 40, and I just turned 40. And it's very clear to me that I have zero interest in retiring anytime soon, if ever. But how can I build a business that's able to run without me so that when I do feel like having those slower times or traveling or do whatever, I'm not constantly getting sucked back into it. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Chase, I appreciate the time and the conversation, and congratulations on the upcoming adventure that you and your wife are going on.
Yeah, thank you. It's exciting.
All right. Good talking to you.
Cool. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. So thinking about hitting the ceiling and mastering those five leadership abilities through Chase and his story. Number one is the ability to simplify. Chase's biggest challenge in simplification is just simply focus. His business naturally has a lot of moving parts: real estate investing, construction, property management, subcontractors, vendors, multiple entities. He identifies the company's niche as high quality investment real estate and improving communities through high quality investment real estate, which helps narrow the business around a clearer core focus. And it helps him simplify a little bit in what he is doing. The cleanest and clearest moment of simplification during our conversation was his shift away from heavy remodels and distressed property rehabs toward that ground up new construction, because it's more scalable, it's cleaner, it's more controllable. And so that's a simplification that he could add, because you don't have all the issues that come out of remodeling existing places. He names that temptation of shiny objects, which is just so common, especially with that residential remodel work. And he says the company has to keep coming back to focus and scale and why behind what it is that they are building. So Chase is really learning that growth as he goes. He says no to profitable distractions so the company can stay focused on the type of work that actually does scale and get him more of what he wants from his business. So I suspect that Chase, in the nature of his business, is going to have to work really hard to stay focused and continuously simplify a business that's inherently pretty complex. Next, delegate. And this is the most explicit leadership ability in our conversation. I think Chase says that one of his earliest ceilings was delegating and bringing on proper team members and willing to delegate to them, to let go of the vine. And he recognizes that the next level for him is not just delegating tasks, but helping leaders take ownership of their roles and contribute to the growing of the business. He said that he sees opportunity in investing time and energy into leaders, teaching them not only how to do their jobs, but why decisions are made, so then they can make the decisions without him being so much involved. Near the end of our conversation, he was talking about that he just waited way too long trying to do everything himself, and he was hesitant to bring in help. And this is just a common refrain that we hear from entrepreneurs all over the world, is they waited just too long. And as the saying goes, what's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago, next best time, right now. Chase's main ceiling is moving from being the central doer and decision maker for the company to building leaders who can think and decide and own the outcomes without him being involved. Next is the ability to predict. Chase's is actively considering the constraints that could slow the business down before they become full-blown chaos. And the biggest one he talked about is capital, especially as the company looks towards larger development projects and being able to predict that into the future. He recognizes that real estate and construction are cyclical, describing the current market as a little bit slower and harder than he would like, and comparing it to a pendulum that just eventually swings back. And his ability to predict that will be much, it'll be helpful. His predictive work is about preparing during the slow season so the company can survive in this slower time and thrive through it. And I suspect preparing for the busy times, because that can create a whole lot of chaos as well. So he talks about scaling up from that scattered site, single family homes and duplexes, to those larger development projects, using the unit count as a way to plan for future growth. And so Chase is really learning to anticipate capital needs, market cycles, and scaling constraints before growth exposes the weaknesses in his business. So the next ability is the ability to systemize. During our conversation, Chase repeatedly points to the need for better processes as the company grows, And he acknowledges that what worked with a smaller team and fewer properties, it doesn't work with at 130 plus units and a larger construction operation. He talks about how the company is consistently and constantly refining processes, making small improvements over time, and recognizing that those improvements compound and get better and better as you go. A strong example of systemization is the company's post-project review process, evaluating the construction budgets, underwriting that accuracy, what went well, what didn't, and how they can improve next time. He also talks about the experience in his head and transferring it to the team so they can avoid major mistakes and understand why certain decisions are made. So Chase's systemization ceiling is converting founder knowledge into repeatable processes, creating those feedback loops and training systems that survive beyond his personal involvement, and he'll be able to do better things as he goes. Finally, the ability to structure. Chase's structure is complex. It's the nature of his business, multiple companies, 10 employees working on different things, contractors and in-house team members, subcontractors, vendors, a fractional CFO who sits on the leadership team. And he talks about that these companies have some separate employees in between. So it's a different kind of structure. But there's still crossover in between. And over the last year and a half, they've tried to separate the companies as much as possible, creating the right structure for the business to eliminate that complexity and confusion. The company does use core values to evaluate subcontractors and vendors, which really provides structure to those relationships and non-traditional employees who still function as part of the team. So it's a little bit of part of structure too. His 10-year target of $250 million in revenue and 35-plus employees is going to require more intentional structure than that current founder-led model that he has. And I think the closing lesson with Chase is that entrepreneurs should build an actual business rather than operate with a side hustle mentality, and you know, you kind of end up creating a job for yourself, so that the business can eventually run without you constantly getting pulled back in. And it sounds like Chase is in the middle of moving from that mixed founder-centered structure to a more scalable company architecture with clear roles, leadership seats, and operating pulse. If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.